Clayton. John Clayton.
And now, I'm done with my segment.
This is the Coors Light Cold Hard Facts with John Clayton.
Brought to you by Coors Light. Made to chill.
We continue with the football conversation here on Bob, Dave, and More with the professor, John Clayton, who joins us every single day at this time. Hello, John.
Hello, guys.
Good to talk to you, and hopefully you had a great weekend. Want to get your take on what's going to happen with the vote tomorrow and everything, but we were having a discussion to open the show about Jadeveon Clowney and whether Pete and John need to sit down and say, and they may have already done this, but just sort of have a deadline in their mind in terms of a date where they either know he's going to be here or he's not going to be here, and we need to start pursuing Plan B, whatever Plan B is, trades, free agents, whatever that is. Do you believe that they need to have a drop-dead date?
Yeah, I just don't know when. I mean, my thought would be sooner rather than later, because if all of a sudden Everson Griffin comes off and goes to another team, now you're limited to Marcus Golden and some other players that aren't going to be equal. And you may take the tack that is like, okay, if you're not doing Clowney, maybe you bring in 2-3 guys. You know, maybe you try to bring Griffin, Korea, who is a linebacker with the Tennessee Titans, Golden, all those different guys in. So the thing is, the Clowney's the one who's one of the 6 or 7 best edge rushers in football, and you'd like to have him. So I guess you get the feel that John Steiner's looking at it two ways. He's going to give Clowney not as much time as he wants, but he's going to give him time because he realizes if the deal is going to be less than, the $15-plus million he made last year, then he's not going to be a happy camper. But, I mean, you have to do what you think is the best organization. Second, he also probably has to understand the landscape of what's going on in the league that is unlikely, and I would say as far as is unlikely that Clowney is going to get a deal before the draft, if that's going to be a case from another team, because they're not going to be able to get him in for a physical. I know that everything's being reviewed in New York as far as when they're going to reopen headquarters. What's not going to change is going to be the physicians and getting a physical. And right now, if you're Clowney, you might be able to work out something, but the physical has to be so extensive because of his past injury that, just going to an independent doctor in Houston may not work out as well. And if you're going to be the team that's going to put up, $14, $15, $16 million on a one-year deal for him. So I think that he's trying to gauge, because you look at the teams right now looking for edge rushers, and most of them have been taken care of.
All right, John, where do you think, what's the point where you don't get the value out of, how much would you have to pay him to be considered overpaid? Because I just feel like anywhere in that reasonable range, he's going to be worth the money, but what would be where you would draw top line there? Considering
my number is 17, like it's a little bit above that, because, that seems to be, 17-7 is the franchise number, and for a defensive end, not a linebacker, but, I'd say 17 was what, D. Ford, Eric Armstead got. I mean, my number would be 17. I don't think that's Seattle's number, because I think they also look at the injury history and all that, and knowing what the market is. And again, you don't want to overpay if you have the opportunity to do it. And you realize it's like, they're getting to the point now, where they just put the Philip Dorsett deal in. They put the Chase Warmack deal in. So the only one they don't have under contract right now as far as the cap is Bruce Irvin. But, if you do, let's say, a one-year $14 million deal, then you have to clear cap room, because that's just going to be necessary, because the cap room went pretty fast, but understandably it's still a good thing. But I have to say right now that his value on the open market I think is less than 15. I'd pay 17, but then I'm overpaying probably for what the market is.
Well, John, when you look at other teams that might be in the need of a pass rusher, some teams that haven't already signed a free agent at that position, and then if you look at the salary cap numbers, who's best suited to give Seattle competition for Clowney?
Best suited are probably two teams that he wouldn't go to. The Washington Redskins, that would be a team, but then there's two things going against them. They're not going to, you can see the way they're doing free agents right now. They're barely paying anybody over $3 million on one-year deals, and they're just getting depth more than they are quality, because they can get depth in the draft when they have the second pick and take Chase Young. Another team could be the Carolina Panthers, but, I mean, you look at how many players have been ripped out of that team, and they're having a change in quarterback, that's not going to be a winning team. Miami, He's already looked at Miami, and for 2 years he's decided not to go there. I was making a call to Cleveland today, and there was a thought that maybe, you know, that could be a team that could be in the mix. But for that to happen, they're going to have to cut Olivier Vernon, and then he's back being a 3-4 linebacker, which is not, I mean, he's went to three Pro Bowls as a 3-4 linebacker, but there's less value for a linebacker than there is going to be a defensive end. So I think, you know, he's trapped in a lot of ways, but any team that needs him that's not in Seattle, that's why what you're looking at, like in the Michael Brockers situation, okay, it failed because of the high ankle sprain that Brockers had, and so they pulled the deal, and so that happened. But, you know, one thing at this stage, if Clowney agrees to go to another team, and, you know, Seattle already knows every bit of his medical history because he was on the team last year, you know, they can sign off on him and get that all done. Where you look at another team, you know, they could take the tact and say, okay, we'll give you 17 on a 1-year deal, and then you come in training camp where the next time that you can report, and they fail you on the physical because they may have taken a draft choice at defensive end. So that's the problem that he faces. That's why, you know, it's still increasing the chance that Seattle can get him back.
The professor is with us. If you guys have questions for John, you can text him into 710-710. We'll try to get to some of those questions before we let him go at the end of the segment. John, as far as the other options out there that we've talked about, we always bring up a potential trade, whether it's Judon, whether it's Ngakoue. Are those realistic? Do you feel like those are just talking points for us in the media and hopeful, wishful thinking by the fans? Or do you think the Seahawks are legitimately maybe having some of those conversations, just trying to see what it would take to acquire one of those players?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's within reason to think that, you know, that can be an option. I mean, right now, Jacksonville's electing to take the position with Unique Ngakoue that it's not an option because they want to try to keep him, even though you figure if they try to keep him, he's going to hold out the entire training camp, and who could hold out into the season? He could do the same thing as Jadeveon Clowney did and then get traded. So the weight's on there. Matthew Judon, I think you have to check out because, you know, if they can't get a deal done with the Ravens, and remember, they just lost Brockers at $10 million a year, and their cap situation is reasonably tight. You know, they may not be able to get the long-term deal done. If that's the case, that could be in play, and that could be probably for, you know, a second-round choice and maybe a fourth-round choice. And the reason I say it would be two choices is if you look last year, you know, when the 49ers picked up Dee Ford, you know, Dee Ford ended up, I mean, what, San Francisco was the second pick in the second round. So you're getting a high second round pick where you, in Seattle, you're getting a low second round pick because, you know, they're 27th in the draft order. And so that's a lower pick. So something has to go in addition. And so that could be a 2 and a 4, but, you know, at least the Ravens, if they can't get a deal done with him, would at least be able to get something better than the compensatory pick that they would get the next year.
Hey, John, free agent safety Eric Reed has enlisted his collusion case lawyer, Mark Garagos, to request an invalidation of the new labor deal. And it's based on something about what was originally proposed to the players and then the final version. Do you know anything about this? Does it have any legs or any ability to get anything changed?
Well, I mean, again, it's like that's the one thing is that the players, you know, voted on something and all of a sudden there is a change. And so, you know, something could be done, but I can't imagine they're going to blow up a 10-year labor agreement over this one thing. Maybe what it comes down to is that, you know, settlement has to be done kind of, because remember, Garagos was suing on Colin Kaepernick and he was able to get a financial settlement out of it for him. But in the case of Eric Reed, I mean, Eric's now putting himself in a position like Colin Kaepernick, because if you're suing on something like this, you have the union against you, you have the NFL against you, and so you're probably, you know, getting out of football and hoping to get a money claim on it because, you know, he'd been let go by the Carolina Panthers. So, you know, again, it's like legally, I'm not the expert on that one. I think, you know, you can't overturn a deal like it. Could you imagine? I mean, there's been over $1 billion spent in signing bonuses and salary and contracts in free agency. If they would, you know, go ahead and eliminate this deal, it would all fall apart because, again, salaries went up. The minimum salary went up. You know, signing bonus money went up on certain things. Everything kind of went and escalated. And so all of a sudden, you know, he may be making his point and maybe it's right. But now you're taking every player in the league who's got a deal, you know, the 250-some players that got deals, and now negatively affecting them because all those deals would probably get washed out.
John, were you surprised to hear the Buccaneers general manager saying that Tom Brady made more of a sales pitch to the Bucs than the other way around?
A little bit, yeah, because, I mean, let's put it this way. You knew at the combine that Bruce Arians wanted him. I mean, as the week got closer to the legal tampering period, the stories were coming out how strong they wanted him. So I think it's a nice semantical thing that he's doing there by just trying to say, okay, yeah, Tom made a good pitch to have us sign him. But, of course, I mean, they didn't need a pitch. I mean, they were going to be in the first wave. You know, Tennessee would have too, but they were able to get the Tannehill deal done. But, no, I think it's a nice little twist of the story. But, they wanted the Brady, the Bucs did, and Bucs apparently Brady wanted the Bucs as far as when – I had the chance to talk.
John, the 925, I'm not sure where that is, but they would say, Professor, is Ken Norton on the hot seat this year?
I mean, maybe after the season if it's a bad season, but not now. I mean, you notice there was no change. And, can you think about how bad it would be in the defensive room if you would take away Ken Norton Jr. when, you know, three of his best students are now important elements of this team. You know, Bobby Wagner, KJ Wright, and now Bruce Irvin coming back. I mean, it would be a protest if anything happened. And so, you know, the problem that they had is that the combination for talent didn't work out as far as the pass rush. But now, if they can still get Clowney, if they, you know, they've been able to add Bruce Irvin, we'll see what else they're going to be able to add. You know, I think everything should be fine. Say what you want about Ken Norton Jr. I thought he had more creativity than any time with the blitzes that he was able to come up with, because they did more things than they normally can do because they needed to do it because they just didn't have the flat-out ability to have a four-man pass rush.
Hey, John, do you think Tyrod Taylor can get it done in with the Chargers? I've always liked him, and career 54 touchdowns, 20 interceptions, but you think he's going to be the new make it as following up as far as Phillip Rivers leaving there and going to Indy?
Yeah, I think he's not going to equal, obviously, what Phillip Rivers did, but I think he's a good enough quarterback to get by until the quarterback they draft, whether it's Tua or Justin Herbert, gets on board and gets on speed. You know, is he good enough to, you know, get them to a wild card? Yeah. Is he good enough to beat Patrick Mahomes? No. He's not going to be good enough to beat, you know, Ben Roethlisberger. He probably may not be able to beat Lamar Jackson, maybe not even Deshaun Watson. But I think that, you know, he's good enough to put them in a playoff hunt as long as they continue to have the good offseason that they've had. And they've had a good offseason, you know, with the two additions to the offensive line. You know, they were able to get Brian Bulaga. They were able to, go ahead and trade for Trey Turner, the guard, and they got Chris Harris at cornerback. So I think they're having a good off season, which is good. But and they also got Linville Joseph. So I think they've replenished things to a point where they can challenge for a wild card.
John, it's Richard Sherman's 32nd birthday today. How many more years do you think he can still be an effective left corner before they maybe shift him back in the defense a little bit?
I think he can probably go two more years. Maybe I'm underestimating where he can go because, again, his game is footwork and brains and recognizing what the plays are going to be and just, you know, sure out ability to, you know, make sure that nobody throws on him. Now, we saw in the Super Bowl that he had three throws on him at the very end that were pretty costly, but I still think he has two or three. And, of course, the one thing that could also be in the mix, I wouldn't rule it out, is that if he gets to the stage where his cornerback play drops, he could move to safety and be a free safety.
John, I was reading a story earlier today about the draft and the potential of Roger Goodell just making the picks, announcing the picks from a remote location, whether it was in his house or elsewhere, that seemed to be a, you know, like a last ditch thing. Have you heard much in the way of how they plan on conducting the draft?
I think that's going to be pretty much it. I mean, you know, because, you know, the two cities that you would think would be able to host the draft under these circumstances are two of the cities that are in the worst part of the country right now as far as the virus, New York City and Los Angeles. You know, it's not going to be in Vegas. And so, you know, there's several elements that are going to be there. And I guess the technology is such where you can probably, you know, do it because, I mean, you know, you know from the radio station that everybody's on remote. I mean, every team right now has every front office person on remote because they're not, the offices aren't even open. But I have to think, you know, that would be the way to do it. And the networks just have to figure out, you know, how to make it look nice and look good. But, yeah, I think that everything's going to be, you know, it's going to be a home draft.
John, my new favorite, least favorite, I should say, team, the Green Bay Packers, they don't value inside linebackers. Blake Martinez talking about he had a $30 million deal that he signed with the Giants, and he had a really good year, man. I mean, made lots of plays. He was the second leading tackler in the NFL, and he feels like the Packers just didn't value that position as much as others.
It's not a matter they didn't value it. It's just a matter that, you know, they had paid big money last year to get the Smiths, who are, you know, came in and had a phenomenal year in free agency. They also realized that you know, they're going to have to make some sacrifices because, again, they went 4-for-4 in free agency last year, doing an incredible job. But you can't keep everybody, and so, you know, they were able to go ahead and go on the cheap to try to be able to try to, you know, replace some guys, and that's why, you know, they were able to get, you know, Christian Kirksey as a replacement for him, yet much less in the $5 million range. And then, of course, they realized that Brian Bulaga was going to cost $10 million, and so they paid you know, much less, I think, what, 3.5 or so, to get you know, Ricky Wagner. So, you know, like anything else, when you've got a high paid quarterback like Aaron Rodgers and you have other guys in the future that you have to sign, you just can't keep everybody. And so they made that switch. It wasn't a matter that I don't think they valued the position, but then the question is, can you have three linebackers of your four, you know, making $10+ million a year? And I think you can see from their actions the answer was no.
John, the Seahawks are going to have two new starters on the offensive line. They've added Greg Olsen as a tight end and then Philip Dorsett to the receiving core. Assuming that Chris Carson is good to go at the beginning of the year, do you think the offense will be better this year?
I think so, yeah, because it's now the third year in the system. Russell Wilson, you know, and this is where it's going to be so different, because and by not making too many changes, as long as they don't make too many changes, that's where they're going to have an advantage over a lot of the other teams, because, you know, a lot of the other teams that have coaching changes, coordinator changes, you know, have a new quarterback coming in, you know, and no off-season program, I mean, you're putting everything together in training camp, and it might be a short training camp. So that's where the advantage is. And, of course, I guess it probably helps, you know, that Russell's so good in scrambling around and being able to make plays up when nobody thinks that can happen. And so that's where, I mean, he has an edge. And, again, the quarterback play is going to be the key. And right now, with a great quarterback, and now, you know, at least more speed at wide receiver with Philip Dorsett, you know, a steady hands with Greg Olsen, you know, there's still the group that comes back from last year. And if they get the offensive line better, then they should be pretty good on offense. They were good last year. They've been good the last 2 years.
John, we were looking at ESPN's way too early power rankings that they released today. No surprise, Kansas City Chiefs are number one, followed by the Ravens, the 49ers, the New Orleans Saints, the Green Bay Packers, and then the Seattle Seahawks at number six. Does that feel like the right spot for them? Are there any teams in front of them that you think should be behind them?
No, I think that's pretty fair, because, you know, the NFC's better than the AFC because, again, they've got, you know, 12 quarterbacks experienced enough and paid enough that they're making $21 million a year or more, where you look in the AFC, where two-thirds of the quarterback there are still in their rookie contracts. They're young, and most of them haven't been winning. So you would have to think that you know, you put the three young quarterbacks and one, Deshaun Watson in Houston, you know, Patrick Mahomes in Kansas City, and Lamar Jackson into the mix. But then you look at Houston after that DeAndre Hopkins trade, you know, that dropped them down for talent. And so I think, you know, that's a pretty fair estimate, because, you know, say what you want, the defensive end position ultimately is going to be determined, you would have to think. And, you know, that's the one thing that pulls them down a little bit right now. But they've exceeded what they normally would do this offseason, because, I mean, now you look at the secondary, that secondary now looks really good, you know, with Quandre Diggs and Quentin Dunbar and Shaquille Griffin and Bradley McDougal. They've really got now a great secondary. It's just a matter of figuring out the defensive end position and getting that right. You know, they've now got so many options on the offensive line that they should be better there. And they've got, you know, Philip Dorsett now with speed challenging as the number three. And they have to kind of figure out running back, you know, figure out the backup quarterback position. But after that, I think they're in pretty good shape.
Yeah, and John, you mentioned Bradley McDougal there, and you know, and I like Marquise Blair, of course, but is this kind of a prove it year for McDougal? Because you know, if Diggs goes out and has, you know, a full season the way he played last year, and then you mentioned the competition at corners, you know, Bradley is, you know, it's been okay. I mean, he had a better year the year before, but I wonder if this is a time for him to really step up. I wonder if they feel that way, or that maybe that they would like a little bit more competition at that position.
Yeah, I think that, you know, I think he played not as well as he did 2 years ago when he was a Pro Bowl alternate, but I still think he's good. And I think that, you know, you judge him because when you're looking at what, because again, how many different free safeties did he go through last year? And so much of fell on him, you know, to try to keep all the young corners in line, to keep everything together. And, you know, he had to kind of go between free safety, strong safety, all those different things. But I mean, you can see that, you know, they're at the point where you know, this, a lot of things have to be determined this year, because Shaquille Griffin's contract's up, you've got Quentin Dunbar's contract is up, you know, I think McDougal's contract is up, and you know, Quandre Diggs I think has one more year after this. So now if this secondary plays like I think it could, you know, you're not going to be able to keep everybody. Something has to give, and that's where, you know, Blair may have to, you know, get on the field for some. Maybe he can challenge and knock McDougal out of there. But I think right now, I mean, you take the strength of what you have and you worry about the future in the future.
John, Tom Dempsey, we learned today, tested positive for coronavirus, the former kicker. He's already suffering from Alzheimer's and dementia. And I've always had a soft spot in my heart for Tom Dempsey. I can still remember in 1970 when he kicked that 63-yard field goal from his own 37-yard line. And, Professor, I know you remember the days when the goalposts were right there on the goal line. For the younger listeners, could you tell them a little bit more about Tom Dempsey?
Yeah, I mean, and he was so unique because he kind of had that boxed foot that, you know, he didn't have all the toes and all that stuff. And so he had to wear a very special shoe. And, you know, despite you know, not having, you know, all those digits down there in his feet, I mean, he was able to make an incredible kicker. You know, and that's of course at a time where you really did not have the soccer style kicking that was there. I mean, you just kind of kick straight ahead. But I mean, he had certainly one of the most strongest legs in kicking straight ahead, and that 63-yard field goal was just magic. But I mean, you know, he was one of those bigger guys, because a lot of times, I mean, you see kickers and they're not the biggest guys. I mean, you know, he was as big almost as a linebacker, not like he was in the best of shape and all that stuff, but he was just a great kicker with a very different type of shoe.
John, great stuff as always. We'll talk again tomorrow.
Okay, sounds good.
There you go. The Professor John Clayton with us every day here with Bob, Dave, and more. If you missed any of today's cold hard facts, brought to you by Coors Light, made to chill, just download the podcast at 710sports.com.